Wildlife Biologist based in Kirby.
We had a recording come over the top of you. You want to state your name again?
Sarah Long.
I'm not picking it up. You're too far from your mic.
Sarah Longson, Galena Assistant Area Wildlife Biologist.
Oh, I think Sarah.
Yeah.
And Jack, this is Kyle Camp from Board Support Session, and I apologize, I meant to start that recording as soon as you called the meeting to order, but I am taking notes here as well, so if you miss anything, I can connect with you afterward.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else from ADF&G staff?
Hey, Jack, this is Shane Ransbury. I'm the Assistant Manager for the fall season under Christy Gleason.
Okay, thanks, Shane. Okay, anybody else? No? And any guest presence on the phone? Anybody that's from the public? And we'll go, Jeremy Havner's on here. That's U.S. Fish.
Yeah, hey, Jack, this is Jeremy Havner with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service out of Galena.
Anybody else from agency staff? Federal staff? Okay. So the committee members have received your agenda. Does everybody get the packet? Or most of the packet? Rudy probably doesn't have a packet. But
I got a packet.
Oh, you do? Okay, good. So, any additions to this agenda? Any discussion of the agenda? So, no? Your chair will entertain a motion to adopt the agenda. I need a motion and a second.
Is there a motion?
And who's that? Who made the motion?
Zero, Ben. Can you hear me, Jack?
Second. We have a second on that motion.
This is Charles, a second.
Okay, Charles. Thank you. So, those in favor of the agenda, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. So I got all affirmative votes to approve the agenda. And then there's the minutes from our February 15 meeting of 2022. Any discussion on those minutes? So that would have been in your packet also.
And so what we started doing is we started bringing our people together.
Call for Richard. Is there a motion to approve?
Carol makes a motion to approve the minutes from February 15, 2022. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Jack Holshies. Further discussion? Question on the motion. Those in favor of the minutes from February 15, 2022 provided in the packet signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. And next on the agenda is number seven here, Chair's report. I listened to the Board of Game meeting last March, and their deliberations, and I wrote a letter regarding the sheep issue to the board for this committee, submitted that to the board, and that was brought up as an RC in their discussions. And there were other chairs from other areas, ACs, that were also concerned about the sheep population. That's about all my report right now. That was the progress that was made since our last meeting on February 15th. So we're going to go to ADF&G, Yukon River Salmon Summary Report. It's going to be a joint presentation. We have that. Go ahead, staff.
Hi, Jack. This is Gina John with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I can give a brief update on the 2022 season. Our season summary for the summer season was published back in November 21st. So you might have received that as an advisory announcement or as part of your packets. I'll just very briefly summarize the season summary. So as folks know, going into the season, we had some pretty low forecasts. And so we started the season closed. We started closures on June 2nd in District 1 and the Coastal District to make sure that fishing was closed before the first fish got into the river. Those closures were walked up river based on migratory timing. The Keokuk River was left open a little bit later to allow for more opportunity to harvest sheepfish before the salmon got to that area. The runs came in quite low at the midpoint of the run. It was pretty obvious that we were not going to meet any escapement goals for king salmon, and the summertime salmon run was going to come in below the drainage-wide goal of 500,000. So salmon fishing remained closed all season. Non-salmon fishing was open with 4-inch or smaller mesh gill nets restricted to 60 feet or less in length all season. And then folks could also use other non-salmon gear, such as like spears and pike nets. And folks could use dip nets and hook and line where those gears are available for the harvest of pink salmon and sockeye salmon. But they had to release all kings and chum to the water alive. And as folks know, you can use hook and line for subsistence up to and including the Nulato River. Towards the end of the season, the assessment projects that were operating just showed very low abundance of salmon getting to their streams. Up at Eagle, the sonar, which is right below the U.S.-Canada border, they counted just a little over 12,000 king salmon, which is the lowest count that they've ever gotten at that project for kings. And for summertime salmon, we counted around 463,800 summertime salmon, which is below the historical median of 1.6 million, and it's the fourth lowest count on record for that project. The counts from 2021 were obviously much, much lower. Those are the lowest counts. And 2022 ended up squeaking in just above the counts that we had in 2000 and 2001. So the fourth lowest counts for summertime salmon at Pilot. And so this meant that we had to keep salmon fishing closed for kings and summertime all season. We maintained those closures through all the districts and tributaries, and of course, the commercial, personal use, and sport fisheries were closed all season as well. If you want more details, I can go through and walk through some of the information from the escapement projects. We saw very low counts at all the projects that operated. Some projects didn't operate, such as the Andrea Stew River project didn't go in because of the forest fires that were near St. Mary's and Pilot Station this summer. We saw a lot of high water this season, but we didn't really see abnormally hot water temperatures, which was good. There is a lot of research going on looking at salmon health and body condition and diseases. So there's an Ichthyophona study that looked at Chinook salmon at Pilot Station near the Rampart Rapids and also at Eagle, looking at presence and severity of Ichthyophona infections in king salmon, and I'm planning to continue that work for the next couple of years to hopefully help us get an index that we can use to continue sampling king salmon at pilot to get an estimate of how severe the ichthyophonus prevalence is in any given year. But this project is really trying to help us get a handle on this difference between estimates, which has really been cropping up in the last 3 or 4 years, where we've seen more Canadian origin king salmon at pilot than we have arriving at Eagle. You know, and so last year, I think we saw, I think we were 20-some thousand Canadian origin king salmon at pilot estimated, but only 12,000 made it to Eagle, so a difference around 9,000 or 10,000 fish. So we're really trying to figure out where those 9,000 or 10,000 fish went. We know that they weren't harvested because fishing was closed. There was a small amount of subsistence harvest from 4-inch smaller mesh gillnets, but we're really trying to investigate what happened to those fish as they migrated upriver. Also, next summer, there's going to be a Chinook salmon tagging study that goes into place, and so they're going to tag fish in the lower Yukon, use radio telemetry towers, and figure out where those fish are going. And they should be able to pair it with individual assignments, so they should know when they tag a fish, they'll take a genetic sample and know, you know, if that is a Canadian origin fish or a Canada origin fish, they should be able to see that fish, you know, make it to Canada or make it to Panama, or try to determine if it doesn't make it and has mortality along the way. So yeah, with that, I'll turn it over to, I guess I'll stand by for questions. And then if you guys are good with the summer season, we can move on to the fall season summary.
One question.
How many fish did you say you guys missed counting? 10,000?
So up at Eagle for Chinook salmon, they counted 12,025 Chinook salmon at Eagle.
That's a no-brainer, ain't it? There's a lot of tributaries going up the Yukon River.
Yeah, so they counted around 50,000 king salmon at pilot, which is an incredibly low run. And so those fish at pilot are made up of stocks from other tributaries throughout the middle, lower Yukon, the Chena and the Tanana. And so, yeah, we know that those fish do go spawn in other areas. But of the 20 or so thousand Canadian origin kings that they estimated at pilot, only about 12,000 of those made it up to Eagle.
Yeah, but don't you count the tributaries?
Escapements into the tributaries were quite...
That's where all the escapements got to go, ain't it?
Yeah.
Not only going to Eagle.
Correct, yeah. The fish would be going to tributaries along the way, but we also do think that there is something that's happening to the fish along the way. Because those Canadian origin fish should have gone past pilot. We don't think that they would have necessarily strayed to streams below pilot, or below Eagle. The escapements that we did see into other streams were also really low. They counted only around 355 kings in the Chena River and a little over 1,000 in the Salcha. So yeah, the counts overall last year were quite low for the fish that we did assess going into different streams.
Any other questions? My question is, can you do a blood test for ichthyophonus when you're doing your tagging studies, or you have to cut the fish to determine if they have ichthyophonus?
Yeah, unfortunately, it does have to be lethal sampling. They do need to take the fish open and look at the heart, and that's where they're taking all the samples of heart tissue. Their Morag Clinton with UAF was trying to look at a way to do non-lethal sampling for ichthyophonus, but the technology just is not there yet, which is very unfortunate, and we certainly would hope that they're... You know, it would be a lot better if there was a non-lethal ichthyophonus sampling method. We would certainly be using that. But unfortunately, Mark, lethal sampling is the only option that we've got right now.
Okay.
Did
Sansaray do that? Yeah, Sansaray was involved in the sampling that took place at the Rampart Rapids. So they caught fish there in the gear, and then they looked at ichthyophonus, and there's also a lot of other work that was going on last summer looking at, like thionine levels and egg fecundity, the regular age sex length stuff, fat meter sample or fat meter readings were taken from fish at LYTF. There's some other diseases and parasites that folks were looking at. So we collected a bunch of different samples, and those are getting used by a bunch of different researchers throughout this winter to help try to understand what's happening to the fish as they migrate back upriver. Katie Howard is going to give a really great presentation. I think she's giving her presentation at the board on Saturday. So between Katie Howard and Sabrina Garcia, they're going to be given some presentations on salmon health and how they grow in the Bering Sea, and then also the stressors that they're experiencing as they...
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Dina? Don't hear any. Christy?
Yeah, hi everyone. This is Christy with Fish and Game in Fairbanks. So I'll give a summary of the fall chum and the coho season on the Yukon River. So this past summer in 2022, this was our third year of falling below our drainage white skating goal for fall chum, and that's even with all fall chum fishing closed. And so this year we counted about 243,000 fall chum compared to a historical run size of 1 million. The coho run came in at about 102,000 compared to a historical run of 234,000. And so those numbers end up being the third lowest on record for fall chum and second lowest on record for coho. We didn't meet any escapement goals for either species or our treaty objectives into Canada. We had the same non-salmon gear and selective gears open that Dina mentioned. So we did allow for people to go get non-salmon, pink, sockeye, and some coho salmon, but all the harvests were really low from even using those selective gear types. And so this season we did do three additional research projects. We restarted a historical sonar project on the Shinjek River up by Fort Yukon, and this will help us track spawning escapement of fall chum into this river. We deployed about 350 radio telemetry tags and coho salmon in the lower Yukon, and this fall and this winter we tracked those through the Yukon drainage, and so we'll be sharing those results with you guys probably in the pre-season meetings when we have a chance to digest all the results. Another thing we did is we collect some samples from fall chum salmon in the lower Yukon and then on some of their spawning grounds on the Delta River by Fairbanks, and we're planning to look at some stress hormone levels to see if there's anything we can glean about what's happening with the salmon decline. And then we do have Sabrina Garcia and Katie Howard. There are marine biologists that are trying to look at what's going on in the ocean and how it's impacting the chum salmon that are returning to the Yukon. And right now the current understanding is we're seeing this chum salmon decline the last 3 years because there's been observed warmer water in both the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska, which is where our Yukon chum salmon spend their first year in the ocean, and then they go out to the Gulf of Alaska. And what we're seeing is negative impacts from the warm water. We're seeing poor quality prey. We're seeing their stomachs are less full, and overall fitness of chum salmon is declining during warm water years in the ocean. And so that's part of the presentation that Katie Howard or Sabrina Garcia are going to give on Saturday's Board of Fish meeting. So in that presentation, if you want to take a look at it, it's available on the ADF&G Board of Fish webpage right now. And that's all I have for fall season summary. I can take any questions. And then once we get into the Yukon Board of Fish proposals, Dean and I are happy to walk through those and introduce them to you guys and answer questions as well.
Okay, thank you, Christy. Anybody have questions for Christy on her presentation for fall season? My one question is, you know, Kotzebue system is lumped with AYK, but their chums run come in real strong. Do they do trophic inventory or smolt inventory in the Chukchi Sea? Is that stock
do they inhabit a different feeding areas than the Yukon and Kuskokwim Dart and the Sound stocks? Do you know?
Yeah, so in our juvenile research that we do during the salmon's first year in the ocean, fall chum that are going to the Yukon, they tend to be in the highest concentrations a little further south, like in the Bering Sea. And then as you move further north, kind of the distribution of our juveniles change a little bit, but they do have quite a bit of overlap. Yes and no. I don't know about where the adults go and how much overlap there is. But we did see that the Kotzebue chum salmon did better than Kuskokwim and Yukon stocks this year.
Yeah. So the pictures I saw of the fish themselves are really in good condition, really heavy weights, look like they had good fat content. Unlike what should be happening on the Yukon and Kuskokwim, the fish actually look a little bad in the inventories that they've done on those at the mouth of the Yukon. Those are showing below level lipid reserves. Could that be a contributor to the lack of making destination? Is a fish coming in at a lighter weight? Question for both Dina and Christy.
Yeah, one thing to point out is in Sound and Kotzebue chum, they're a little bit larger than even our Yukon fall season fish. And we see that in years when we're commercial fishing, we compare our commercial weights to the chum salmon up in Norton Sound and Kotzebue, and their fish tend to be about a pound and a half larger than our chum salmon. And as far as fall chum and coho that are coming back in the river, we're seeing the last couple of years they've been about an inch to an inch and a quarter smaller than what we've ever seen. They're coming in like historically small. We haven't done any fat meter stuff on the chum salmon, so I think that's more related to, Dina can speak to that.
Yeah, for the fat meter stuff, we just started using that at the Lower Yukon Test Fishery this summer. Ben Gray, who works for Sabrina Garcia on the Salmon Ocean Ecology Program, is involved in that, and so I haven't seen his preliminary, preliminary write-up from him yet, but he would be a good one to ask about the fat meter and how that relates to other work that they're doing.
Okay. I appreciate that information. Any other questions from the committee on those presentations?
Yeah. You were talking about all the pink salmon not reaching their goal on the river. As biologists, do you ever consider how much fish we lose by trawling?
Yes.
By the trawlers?
Yeah, in the Bering Sea trawl fishery, they do have Chinook salmon caps, and so they really intensively manage to make sure that they're not going to reach that bycap catch. There's different triggers and targets and management things that go into place. When the three area index of that includes Yukon stocks are low, then it does something else to lower their caps. And then they do try to get genetic samples from those fish to try to come up with an adult equivalency number. I don't have that information handy. The person that usually keeps a good tab on that is Serena Fitka. And so she'll probably have a presentation of that at the Yearg for preseason meeting, and then they'll sometimes have a bycatch focus session during the Yearg for in-season teleconferences.
Okay, because, geez, that's a different story I'm hearing now. I don't know. Just every time we get a report, we hear different stories on the trawlers. I really don't think people are keeping up with what the trawlers are catching. In my opinion, anyway. When we first started this, when Fishing Game first started studying the fish. There was these elders that said they should use traditional knowledge with science. And we haven't seen that done. I think we should start considering co-managing. I know we're supposed to be co-managing now, but in my opinion, I shouldn't even be on the board because I don't believe in the scientific issue that you guys are bringing up. It's hard to swallow. The numbers are wrong. The numbers change. The numbers on the trawlers change. And then they said that there's people out there on the barges, the trawlers. They're documenting how many fish they catch, how much bycatch they catch. And we don't see no reports on that. I mean, all those should be documented and presented to the ACs so we could start getting to the bottom of the trawling, see how much fish they do catch. It's just my opinion. I don't know if I speak for anybody else, but I'm really disgusted because on the Kaikuk River, we don't catch that many king salmon. We target sea fish and whitefish. And now we can't even do that. As subsistence people, we just get enough to eat. And, I don't know. The tanks were in the park anyway.
Thanks,
Jack. Thanks for the comments. And I know the bycatch is it's a big topic. There's a lot of people who are really heavily involved in it. Serena Sitka is a great one to give updates on that process. There is also a call for nomination from Alaska Native Tribes or Tribal Consortium to be designated to an Alaska Native Tribal seat on the advisory panel for the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. They're accepting materials and applications for that up through the end of February 3rd. So if folks do know someone that they want to see to help represent Alaska Native Tribes on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, it'd be great to see some good people on there who can really help to speak strongly for the Yukon and for subsistence interests on the Yukon River.
Yeah, there is that opportunity. That would be a real good opportunity to be on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council to address or talk about this bycatch issue problem. And there is also bycatch in the South Alaska Peninsula. It's an intercept fishery area, referred to as Area M. There's a certain amount of bycatch there of chum salmon that move through there that are destined for the Yukon and Tusculum drainages, AYK stocks. So that's another bycatch issue.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Jack. Alaska Peninsula, Aleutian Island, Chignik Finfish Board of Fish meeting is going to be taking place February 20th through the 25th. Comments for proposals to that meeting are due February 3rd. The Fairbanks AC and numerous other groups have put in proposals that are seeking to address the issue of intercept of Yukon area stocks. In particular, one that gets brought up a lot is Proposal 140. So if folks do want to weigh in and comment on that proposal, there's still time to do that before that AKPAN Board of Fish meeting later this spring.
Yeah, Proposal 140 is in our book, and it's actually a proposal that I feel that we should probably address at this meeting here, but we'll see if we can get to that one. One question I had, since the chum 2021 was the low point and they came back a little bit to the fourth lowest. There's a projection that the CHUM, the marine system, is actually improving, and when will your pre-season forecast be available, and taking into account those increases?
Thanks, Jack. This is Gina John again. We don't have a forecast for summer chum salmon yet. And unfortunately, the way the Bering Sea Trawl Survey is set up, it does a really good job of estimating juvenile Chinook salmon. I think Sabrina and her crew are trying to work on ways that they can change their methodology to make it be more applicable to summer chum. They're trying to work on a model that they can get out of that. I don't have the projections yet for summer chum salmon. I will say that, so our models that we do have are based pretty heavily on sibling and on ricker and on that sort of thing. One of the things that we're going to be keeping in mind as we go into the season is that we're going to start seeing fish come back from 2019 as four-year-olds, and that was the year with the incredibly hot water. So I'm really just kind of taking whatever outlook I see with a grain of salt until I really start seeing fish come back at the end of the season.
Yes, exactly. What's another question, just real quick, is do the fish and game do any smolt out migration or chum on the Yukon River drainage?
The only smolt migration project that I know of is done by YDFDA. So that would be quick pass. If he ever gets to talk to Ragnar, I don't know what they've got. I haven't really seen a publication come out of that work yet. But
hey, Jack, this is Daryl.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, I have a question here. That we're talking about trawling and, a lot of times we don't really see what the situation is out there because the trawling, the fish that they're injecting into the ocean compared to the natural stock is increasing because they need to have more product for their consumers. And I'm worried that, they're injecting too much into the ocean and we're getting, influenced by a more hatchery fish. We have to really consider, in order for our natural stock to be, considered a prized stock, that we need to make sure that they don't over inject fish into the water. We have to try to figure out what they're doing out there, and I think that's one of the problems that we're having. Is they're injecting too many fish out there, and we're not getting enough natural stock coming back to the rivers. So, that's something that we haven't talked about, but I think that needs to be brought up, and that whoever goes into that sees this as the National Pacific Fisheries, that would be one of the... Oh, sorry about that. Okay, all right, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And I'll just mention that is both a Alaska and national and also international issue. So, yeah, it might even be a little bit beyond the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. I'm not really sure I don't know at what level you would need to address it to address, hatchery production in Japan. But that is also a thing that some folks are concerned about and trying to get a better handle and better understanding on as to what kind of interactions are taking place out in the Pacific and in the Bering Sea.
When I was listening to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council meeting about 3 or 4 weeks ago, they referred to the North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission or something like that as somewhat of a managing agency they were trying to shuffle that off on us. And I'm going to have to find out more about that particular federal management group. But I never even heard of an anadromous fish commission until they stated that on the record. One of the board members did. So something to look at. Any other comments or questions? No? We do have Glenn Stout and Sarah Longson on the phone. Do you have any kind of briefing you want to give the committee at this time, Glenn, on moose surveys or or other issues you might have for us.
And Jack, real quick to cut in, this is Kyle Campbell again from Board Support Section before moving on to the next report. We did have another phone caller join during that discussion with the reports from Dina and Christy. Never mind, they just got off the call as I said that. So carry on, sorry.
Okay. So is anybody else on the call?
No other folks have joined the call since then. There was just one new phone caller, but it looks like they just dropped off before I was able to figure out who they were. So sorry for the interruption.
No problem. Glenn and Sarah?
Hi, Jack. This is Glenn Stout. We don't have an update. Hopefully we have another chance to talk about wildlife proposals. There's going to be a deadline May 1st for new proposals for the Region 3 Board of Game meeting. It's probably best to leave this as a fish meeting, and then we can go through some of the wildlife issues at that second meeting.
Okay. Yes, we'll have to have another meeting. you would be available later on this, before the May 1 for some kind of a meeting to develop proposals or discussions?
Here. You bet. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So good to know. And so we'll move on from there. We had the Yukon River Salmon Summary Report. Public comments. Do we have any public members show up on this call at all? Anybody else join this call?
Jack, it does look like a new participant just joined. They're still connecting their audio, so I think they can hear us now. But we have a new participant, Aaron Julianis, has just joined.
Okay. So Aaron is with Bureau of Land Management. Can you hear us, Aaron?
Hey, yeah, this is Aaron Julianis with the BLM in Fairbanks. I just jumped over from the phone. I may have just dropped the call when you guys called on me. So I'm on Zoom now.
Okay. Yeah, he saw you there, and then you dropped out. So, okay, we just went through the Yukon River Salmon Summary Report. So, public comments. I don't hear anybody else, any public members on the phone.
I have a question.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it's mentioned Simon Alcock. Do you have the reports on Sinsaw or Latna or fish?
The summer project?
Yeah, fish council.
Okay, Dina, did you have anything from that?
Yeah. So Henshaw didn't operate this year because they had to repair the weir. I think they had to leave it in last winter because of high water, and then it got further damaged over the winter. So Henshaw did not operate this year.
Okay. Any other questions, Vincent?
Yeah, I talked about contaminants coming out of the mountains. What could we do about it? Do you remember that part?
Yeah, that was while we were waiting for the call to start. So, yeah, when we're waiting. Go ahead.
When can we discuss it?
We could discuss that right now. You know, this would be, it's still in the public comments. You know, that would be appropriate right now. Talking about this mineral releases all across the south slope of the Brooks Range, and especially in the Kaikuk River, upper Kaikuk drainage in the mountains, there's large ice masses that are subterranean that are releasing, they're starting to get to the thaw depth where they're releasing lots of iron and other minerals and mud. Some areas have like these huge landslides or these thaw lobes, and these ice masses move down slope. They plug off creek drainages. All this mud starts coming out, especially to the north, up in the limestone belts to the north of Wiseman. The river runs real muddy all summer, even when it's really dry. And we used to get really clear water in summer, but it doesn't do that anymore. A lot of these, it's either mud, iron, or copper sulfates that can be coming out of some of these drainages from these ice masses. So it would be good to take water quality mineral, the Middle Fork system, a lot of the summer chum, what few that are here, they actually spawn in the main stem drainage. They don't spawn in side streams. And so looking at those pH levels would be, I do know that Alyeska did a lot of work here before the pipeline, and so there's been lots of different works done. So it'd be good to compare some of these, whether that would be detrimental to the stocks also. Chums hatch, they go out with the runoff, but the Chinook stocks that stay in system, they could have problems with, you know, the whole trophic level or biomass of the drainages could be go down because of that. So that's why we were talking about this mineral problem. So there's University of Alaska Fairbanks is going to be looking at those issues. I think there'll be quite a bit of study on that. But I do think that it's been highlighted in the last 2 years by various people, including myself, about this problem. Any other discussions on
Jack,
that? Go ahead.
Yeah. This is Christy with Fish Can Game. Before your guys' next AC meeting, maybe this spring, or if you don't have one until the fall, I can try and follow up with our habitat division and then that one sport fish biologist that was looking at impacts to that Dolly Garden system and my other connection with UAS to see if any research has been done, and I can share that and be prepared to share that next time.
Okay. I'd appreciate that, Christy. Any other comments, Vincent, on this mineral release issue?
Yeah. The other comment would be not only is the orange contaminant with heavy iron, but how could you, if the researcher look at it, how could you divert it or slow down or stop it because it's going to have an impact on the fish that's coming up the stream, all the water that's coming out of the mountains.
Yeah, it's my opinion that there's no, absolutely no way you can stop it. It's just, it's like a huge scale thing. There's like, it's not just one area. It's not like a mine that's releasing minerals. It's like the whole mountains are doing it all over the place, and new sources keep popping up. So it's not something you can really stop. You just have to take it into consideration of what that's actually going to be doing to positive or negative to the fishery stocks that are associated to that. So yeah, for our next meeting, it would be good to get a sort of an overview from Habitat Division on what their progress or what they're thinking about doing. Any other committee members' comments? I'll go through the committee members' comments and concerns. We'll put that into our public comment.
I have one more comment.
Go ahead, Vincent.
Yeah, there's I worked in Coldwood for a bit, and I seen really, really a lot of hunters coming through, getting terrible news, and when those hunters get those kind of hunting and stuff, and is there a report on it, on the counts, on what they get out of off the herds?
Yeah, that would be Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist for those game management unit 24B is where most of that some is from 26B, 26A, and 26C. But yeah, there's a lot of hunters using the road. There were not that many caribou that showed up near the road. A lot of those hunters that you saw going through, those are actually guys, people that are getting flown out. Several air taxis flying people away from the road also. Airboats and whatnot.
Yeah, I know Brooks Range Fuel does that.
And later in the fall, the porcupine caribou herd was coming closer, coming west, and coming into the just to the east of Coldfoot, and there were quite a few caribou killed with air taxis flying out of Grayling Lake and Battles would be the majority of those. Some is from Coyote out of Coldfoot, but not that many. And then there are several hunting guides that are also flying out of this area. But we did, you know, you'd have to. That would all be in the harvest level, and we don't have that available for this meeting. Are there any comments from the committee members about issues that they observed this since our last meeting in February of 15 of 2022?
Hey, Jack, this is Daryl.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, I just have a little bit of comments about, you know, since we've been, you know, having a big decrease in our salmon catches, we're starting to depend more on other fish species. And I spoke to this before when we spoke about it, but when, you know, the chum was starting to get hit commercial, and a lot of people were starting to use more chum. And, you know, every time we spoke about something like this, they say, oh, no, it's not going to, you know, it's not going to really affect them. Well, now we're starting to, you know, we're starting to work more on our sheafish, whitefish in those areas. I'm, you know, really going to keep an eye on what's going on here because we heard before that, you know, they said, oh, yeah, it's not going to really make a difference or it's not going to be as much catch as normal, but when you defeat one fish, you're going to start depending more on other fishes. And we don't really have a cap or count on, you know, these other fish species. I know I've been hearing a lot of people have been catching sheafish up and down the Yukon and the Koyukuk. And the whitefish, they've been catching quite a bit of those up around the Fort Yukon area. You know, there's going to be, you know, a shortage of fish pretty soon. And my worry is that, you know, we start working on these other fish and we don't have any numbers on them. We have to really consider that, you know, it's possible that we could deplete these resources. Thank you.
Thanks, Daryl. Christy, did you want to comment on that?
Being a down the fishing game, I'll comment on that at least a little bit. I don't have the 2022 harvest information in front of me. But we do estimate the harvest of non-salmon species when we do the post-season subsistence surveys. So all the households that get asked about their salmon harvest also get asked about non-salmon harvest. We do definitely acknowledge that the survey is targeted towards salmon fishing households, so it's potential that we miss some non-salmon households that only focus on non-salmon fishing when we're just focusing on salmon fishing households. But that being said, I think a lot of the fishermen that catch non-salmon probably also catch salmon. And so that information does get used to estimate the harvest of a few species that are really widely harvested, like sheafish and whitefish. And then some of the species that are less harvested to a lesser amount or by fewer people, like lamprey or blackfish, those are just reported in the subsistence reports. It's just a total number from the subsistence harvest surveys. So we do get an estimate of harvest every year. Like I said, you kind of think of it more like an index to see like how it's changing year to year or if it's increasing or decreasing. What we saw in the last couple of years is that with the salmon fishing restrictions, that just means that there's so much less gear in the water. And so a lot of folks who would normally get their non-salmon species as incidental to their salmon harvest just didn't get that non-salmon harvest because they didn't have as much gear in the water. Those folks that are really reliant on using 6-inch mesh for sheafish, you know, there was no 6-inch mesh opportunity last season, so a lot of that sheafish harvest was also foregone unless folks were able to go out there with their 4-inch or smaller mesh gill nets. In 2021, we had a harvest of about 37,000 non-salmon species, and that compares to an average of about 100,000 non-salmon species. So while some folks may be relying more heavily on non-salmon, what we've seen is that the overall number of non-salmon has gone down just because there's way, way less gear in the water. If you've got more detailed questions about that, I can see if I can get information from Andy Padilla, or we'll have harvest estimates for non-salmon later on this spring after all the subsistence harvest survey information is all error checked and finalized, and it gets published in a report eventually.
Okay, Dana. So does that address some of your questions, Daryl?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and last year we did put that non-salmon harvest information in the Outlook flyer, and so, yeah, we'll probably do the same thing again this coming spring just because it is really a concern on folks' minds. And they do get estimates of non-salmon passage at pilot, and I haven't dug into that numbers, but there are there's at least that one pilot station sonar assessment project that does get a count of those species going by the sonar every year.
Okay. I wouldn't mind seeing some of those other sheepish apportionment figures at some point also. Thank you.
Yeah, I can see if I can find that in their annual report. That might be included in the report.
Okay. Any other committee member comments?
Yeah, I got one.
Oh, go ahead, Jack.
Vincent, Simon.
Oh, Vince. Oh, I didn't. Go ahead.
Yeah. My comment is we should meet up once in a while because it's more, we will have more progress if the, all the members meet together and compare reports on fish and other game and animals in the interior to make progress with what we're doing.
Yeah.
When we call in, it's just what we think. But if we come together, it's more what everybody thinks, and it's more, the more input, the more progress, and that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. Probably the next meeting, we should have a face-to-face meeting for developing game proposals and some other things. So, but for these few fishery proposals here, this was new. So, any other comments from committee members?
Yeah, this is Charles at Alatec. I just wanted to thank Jack Holtz. You know, he brought up a good point about the bycatch trawlers, and you know, it's not just affecting the fish; it's affecting most of Alaska as subsistence fishing. They're shutting down all the fishing on the Yukon and contributors. I just wanted to mention that, you know, it's really affecting our villages by not catching salmon, and the numbers in salmon are really going down. I just wanted to mention that. Thanks again, Jackie. And I am going to have to get off of the phone for about half an hour from 2:30 to 3, so I won't be on the phone. I'll be back at 3 o'clock. If that's all right.
I guess that's what's going to happen. So, all right. So we've old business. That's on the agenda here. I don't know of any old business. Kyle, do you have anything for that?
No, I don't believe if there's nothing else that you or the other members want to sort of revisit from your last meeting from last year. No old business that I know of.
Okay, thank you. We're going to go through the Board of Fish proposals, and that would have been in your packet. I looked through, some of the proposals don't really apply to our area. This, you know, other portions of the drainage. So if we start with Proposal 79, which is the Keokuk River Advisory Committee's proposal, did most people get the fishery proposal book? It was a blue book. I got mine back like in September or October, something like that. There was a proposal. Okay. Is anybody hearing me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, but that's 70. I thought we're on fisheries. 70. That's
proposal. Yeah. That's right.
I thought we were going. I got an agenda, and I thought we were going to start with 63.
Well, 63 is like, you know, that has to do with the Chattanooga harvest area. That has nothing to do with the Keokuk River.
You know, eventually it's going to hit the Keokuk River, Jack.
I know this is...
If they pass this proposal, they're going to try to pass it on the Keokuk River. So unanimously don't support that proposal.
Well, I mean, the reality is, there's like 100,000 people that fish for pikes down there in the Chattanooga. You know, if all the pikes go to one area, they got a lot of problems. We have very liberal, and it would have to go through the Keokuk River Advisory to change to this proposal. We would fight this type of a proposal on the Keokuk, and it has like no chance of actually being proposed. So I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, we could spend a bunch of time on it, but it actually has no bearing.
If I can add a little bit to that, Jack, and I've heard from other advisory committees or councils is that folks really like the idea that pike can be harvested a lot because they are a fish predator. The only reason why there's limits in this particular area is because of where it is and its, you know, its closeness to Fairbanks, its accessibility to large numbers of people. So I haven't heard of any proposal seeking to limit the number of pike harvested in the Yukon River drainage. It's just specific to this one area that's close to population.
Right. Yeah. So is that clear, Jackie, that this is strictly has to do with one particular drainage?
Well, that happened before, Jack. You say that particular one area is not going to get affected. We're not going to get affected, but we got affected before. But if you want to discuss it, okay. We wouldn't discuss it.
Well, I mean, it would be the rest of the whole Yukon is not under this proposal. This is strictly the Chattanooga harvest area. It's actually a designated area. So we have a lot of proposals that are important to this committee, and we should work on those proposals. You know, there's proposals.
Yeah, let's get through it then.
So proposal 79 in the book, which is on page 104 in the blue book, is our proposal to allow hook and line attached to a pole, rod or pole, when fishing upstream of the Nalato River mouth up to and including the Keokuk River drainage to the closed waters of the Keokuk and subsistence permit area, which is up here at the Dalton Highway corridor. So they pretty much the whole entire Keokuk will be allow hook and line fishing for like graylings and stuff like that. And under subsistence regulations, there's no limit, but under sport fishing regulations, there's limits. This would allow hook and line fishing with rod or pole in the drainage. So we made this proposal last. I submitted this proposal, worked this proposal out, and to submit this to the Board of Fish to allow basically its customary practices. So whose staff members are going to comment on this proposal?
Yeah, hi, Jack. This is Dina Down with Fishing Game. Yeah, so that summary, yeah, it's a great summary of what this proposal does. It would just apply to using subsistence, to fish for subsistence with a hook or line attached to a rod or a pole. Nothing in here applies to fishing through the ice. Ice fishing is allowable for subsistence throughout the Yukon River drainage anyway. So this would just apply to fishing in the summer. So right now you can fish for subsistence with a rod and reel up to and including the New Lotto River. And then above that, you would need to get a sport fish license. This would just mean that you would need a sport fish license to do this in the Keokuk River. The department does support this proposal. It would add options to legal to allowable subsistence year in this portion of District 4. And it would also align state and federal regulations. In federal public waters, rod and reel is an allowable gear for subsistence harvest of salmon and non-salmon species. Some folks have had a conservation concern, so I will also remind folks that there is a regulation that already exists on the book and that we did also put in by emergency order last year, that this regulation allows us to close fishing with hook and line or to restrict bag limits, number, possession, et cetera, from hook and line. That regulation already exists. So folks may have noticed that last year we did allow and encourage folks to use hook and line up to and including the New Lotto River, but they had to release all king and chum salmon alive. So similarly, if we had a conservation concern next year, you know, you would likely see a same sort of restriction where you could use hook and line for subsistence up to and including the Keokuk, but if we had a conservation concern for kings, you would have to release all your king salmon alive from that year.
Okay. Any questions for Dina on this, on the proposal? No? Okay, well, the chair will entertain a motion to adopt the proposal. We have a motion to adopt. Are people hearing me? Hello? Does anybody hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay. Do we have a motion to adopt the proposal? We have to move these proposals through. We can vote it up or down. We have to get the motion on the table, or get the proposal on the table. I need a motion to adopt with a second.
Jack, this is Kyle Campbell from Board Support again. So just for the members on the call currently, so we did lose Charles Ned there for a moment. He said he'll be back at 3 o'clock. We do still have a quorum. Daryl sent a text message saying that he's following the meeting, but, you know, he's also down there at the in Anchorage. So that might be why he's not speaking up right now, but he is following along, so he's still in the meeting, helping to hold quorum. So for the other members on the call currently, Vincent Simon, Jack Holtzies, and Rudy Moses, to get an official record of your advisory committee, you know, either supporting or not this proposal that was submitted by your advisory committee last year, Proposal 79, one of you will need to make a motion, and another one of you will need to second that motion.
So is anybody going to make a motion?
Jack, what was the motion for? I was using the hotel, so.
Oh, it's Proposal 79 to allow basically rod and pole fishing for subsistence fishing in the Keokuk River drainage all the way up here just to the just outside of the Dalton Highway corridor. Basically, people catch fish for subsistence with rod and reel. And so this would allow this legally. Because if a Fish and Wildlife Protection came and you had a 10 grayling limit and you had 25 grayling, you'd get a ticket. And it's because you'd be over bag limit. This would basically allow subsistence fishing, which doesn't have a bag limit. So we're looking for, I'm looking for a motion to adopt the proposal with a second so that we can, this is the Keokuk River Advisory Committee's proposal. So would you like to make that motion, Vincent?
Yeah, I'd make a motion.
Okay. Do we have a second? Are you still here, Jack? Is anybody still here on the phone from the advisory committee?
Again, this is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. We've got Rudy Moses, Jack Holtz, Vincent Simon, and Daryl Vent still on the call with you, Jack.
Rudy, okay. I'll check in.
Okay, Rudy. And so further discussion, this is a customary and traditional practice that would be, I think, illegal to use rod and reel fishing in the Keokuk River drainage upstream of Nalato up to the closed area. Any further discussion? Okay, those in favor of the call for question, those in favor of the proposal signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. I only heard three ayes. So, roll call, we'll have to do roll call. Let's see here.
Jack, again, this is Kyle Campbell from Support. I'm not certain if Jack Holtz, he's still muted. I'm not sure if he's been able to unmute himself or if he's stepped away from the phone at the moment, but I'm seeing he's still on the call, but it looks like he's muted. And then I did just send a message to Daryl. I know he said he was having to speak at the meeting he's at right now in Anchorage, but I believe he is following along. So apologies for the delay here.
Okay. Hey, Daryl, I'm back. Could you please reiterate what you were talking about there? I've been busy with another meeting.
This is Proposal 79. It's the Keokuk River Advisory Committee's proposal to allow hook and line fishing with rod or pole for subsistence from the Nalato River mouth all the way up to the closed area on the upper Keokuk River. Basically, it would allow subsistence use of rod and reel, which is customary and traditional, and make it legal. So that's the proposal. We submitted the proposal during the call for AYK's. So Vincent's made a motion. Rudy is seconded. The proposal's on the table. And so we've got a roll call vote. I'm in favor of the proposal. Daryl, are you in favor of the proposal?
Yes, Daryl. Yes, Daryl. I'm in favor of the proposal.
Okay, Vincent? Simon?
Yes, I am. I was going to today.
Okay. Just want to be on the record. So, Jack, hold cheese. Are you on the phone, Jack, or are you muted still? We can't hear you. So, Jack's not on the his phone is near.
Maybe Kyle can try to contact him. Maybe he got dropped off the line.
Yeah, so I'm still seeing that Jack is on the call, so it does appear he's muted. So I will try giving him a call directly to see if... Oh, here he is.
Hey, I'm here.
Okay, you're voting for the motion, Jack?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Rudy?
Yes.
Okay. So we got five affirmative. So the motion, those opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Support. So then the next proposal that would be, some of these don't affect the area where we're at here. One proposal that we should look at is number 82.
Jack, this is Dina Dell. I might suggest that you guys look at proposal 80. That would affect subsistence king salmon harvest in districts 4, 5, and 6.
Oh, it does. Okay. So you want to give an overview of number 80?
Yeah. Yep. Proposal 80 was proposed by John H. Lamont, and this proposal would restrict subsistence king salmon harvest in the middle and upper Yukon River, which would be districts 4, 5, and 6. So currently, as folks know, there are no king salmon annual harvest limits for subsistence in much of the Yukon area. We manage our fisheries by time, area, and gear. If adopted, households in districts 4, 5, and 6 would harvest a limited number of king salmon. And this would likely require an expansion of the current subsistence permit system. The proposal as submitted did not actually have a number that to what the king salmon harvest would be limited to. In our staff comments, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game opposes this proposal. Existing regulations already provide us with the management discretion by emergency order to limit time, area, and gear. There would be additional considerations for setting up a permit system. And also this proposal as written would just be kind of a one-size-fits-all. Households would just be able to harvest some number of king salmon. Whereas when we do our subsistence household harvest surveys and then speaking with fishermen, we know that households vary widely in their subsistence harvest needs and practices. And so, you know, some households may fish for many other families or fish for a large family. And this would be kind of a one-size-fits-all permit that would get applied to all households fishing for king salmon in districts 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
Hey, Jack, this is Daryl.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, this fishing put in by John Lamont, it doesn't directly affect the Kaikuk River. It was directed more toward the Yukon around the bridge and around Rampart area. They were, you know, thinking that their people were sinking their nets. I think that's the proposal that they're talking about here. And when we fish, you know, we fish in a different kind of a way. So I just want them to explain more on what type of fishing this is.
Dina, this does cover the Kaikuk River.
I wasn't entirely sure. We do often manage the Kaikuk River with District 4. The Kaikuk River is not mentioned in the proposal as submitted. And the proposal as submitted does kind of address some points of like harvest between, you know, if fishes are migrating upriver towards Canada. This proposal doesn't specify what would happen in the Kaikuk River. That'd be a good question to bring up to the board, is if they would consider middle and upper Yukon to also include the Kaikuk River.
Yeah. There are people, I've known of people from Hoosley that fish down on the Yukon, though. So there's...
Jack, this is Jack. I was just going to bring that up. It doesn't affect the Kaikuk River because the salmon, they come up this way, and if they over-harvest down in the mouth for commercial use, that would greatly affect the people in the Upper Yukon, Middle Yukon, Kaikuk River, Tana River. That's what this guy was bringing up. He wants traditionally commercial. I guess they just sell the eggs and they use the fish. They probably sell the eggs and use the fish for subsistence. So it does affect the Kaikuk River. So in my opinion, I oppose this proposal.
Thank you. Thank you, Jack. Further discussion for Proposal 80? I'll oppose the proposal also. I feel that the Department of Fish and Game has way within their management emergency order management to provide for subsistence, which is a state regulation. And so I oppose Proposal 80. Any further discussion? Question? Those in favor of Proposal 80 signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign, aye.
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 Okay. So, Kaikuk River Advisory opposes Proposal 80. So, Dina, you got other proposals we should be looking at?
81 would also affect king salmon harvest throughout the Yukon River drainage. So that would also affect your area.
Okay. Want to give an overview of that one?
So 81 was proposed by the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and this proposal would implement a Yukon River drainage subsistence salmon permit to allow retention of king salmon less than 24 inches in length with an annual limit of 10 fish during times of king salmon conservation. So current regulations, we don't have any size limits. We don't limit households by the number of fish. We just manage by time, area, and year. All of our assessment projects and escapement goals are based on total numbers of fish. When we have year, that could be in the place already. The proposal is written would put in a permit that households would need to get pre-season. If we did implement this as a management action, we would first need to identify that we had a small harvestable surplus that we felt like could only be taken by this permit as opposed to, you know, using other normal gear types. Fishermen with this permit would be able to fish with dip nets and fish wheels, get up to 10 kings under 24 inches or less, and then turn in those permits at the end of the season. So in our staff comments, we did oppose this proposal because all of our metrics and escapement goals are all based on number of fish. Putting in a permit system would have some considerations for the staff and the administration and the data analysis and programmers and getting households to have access to that permit either over the internet or by mail. So there's some considerations that are in place with that. In the discussions, we've had a lot of discussions about this proposal with other ACs. And some folks are of the opinion that these small fish don't matter, that they don't matter to the population. Whereas what we've usually seen is that small fish do tend to be younger male fish. And so these are fish that are not necessarily smaller because they're small. They're small because they're young. They've decided to come back to the river as young fish for whatever reason and make a go of their spawning migration. Small fish are... It's going to be a pretty consistent proportion of the population. Pilot Station estimates small fish as part of their Chinook salmon counts, and they kind of tend to make up about 20% of the number of fish based on their criteria of small fish. So they do have a role in the population. They do have a role to play in giving king salmon kind of population diversity, coming back at different age classes, that sort of thing. But, yeah, so this has generated a lot of really good discussion about what is the importance of small fish? What does it mean to harvest a small number of fish? What would it mean to have a permit in the Yukon River drainage? There's been a lot of good discussion about this.
Yeah. So, any questions for Dina on this? Proposal 81?
Oh, yes. This is Jack again. I have a pretty issue in too because we don't run fish reels or we don't get net. And I know this is going to affect the Kaikuk River. And I don't think anybody would want to stand 24-hour watch looking for a 24-inch with a measuring tape. And the only small ones we catch is Jack Kings. So what we call Jack Kings. I don't agree with this one.
Yeah, that's thanks, Jack. Any other discussion? I just don't like this proposal. I feel that trying to assess whether this fish is 24 inches or less, flopping around, the fish is going to get beat up, and oh my gosh, it's 25 inches, and you throw it back in the water. See, the use of these fish that may more than likely not make destination because of being overhandled. So that would be one of the issues that I used to take genetic samples for the Department of Fish and Game on Jim River and drainages here with Chinook. And I see those young, precocious males staying near the main female, and there's usually a big male there, but they dart in and out, and they're a contributor in when she starts to spawn. So they also, because they stay around, they also help defend the reds from grayling. As soon as she spawns, those grayling are really trying to get those eggs, and so the more defenders around one of the nets, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So there's some issues. I don't believe that small kings are completely unnecessary. You know, Jack Kings are not a necessary component. They have their place. They have their role. That's why they're there. So I oppose the proposal. Any other discussion? So the chair will entertain a motion to adopt proposal 81 with my intention of voting up in opposition. Do we have somebody to make a motion to get it on the table?
Make a motion to adopt, Daryl.
Okay, Daryl. We have a second. Have a second to adopt the proposal. My intention is to vote it down. Jack, you want to?
Second.
Okay, second. So, any further discussion?
Call for question.
Questions called. Those in favor of proposal 81 signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign, aye.
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 Okay. Opposed. Dina, next proposal.
Jack, this is Chris with Fish and Game. Dina and I are going to take turns with some of these proposals. We kind of split up the workload this year, so I can address the next couple. Proposal 82 was proposed by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and this proposal would modify the dates sinking of gill nets are allowed in the Yukon area from October 1 to April 30th. So if this proposal was adopted, this would require that gill nets have a visible float line and floats or corks on the surface of the water in the Yukon River drainage during the summer for subsistence, personal use, and commercial fishing. And the department submitted and supports this proposal. We think that by having the floats and the float lines visible in the water, surface of the water during the summer season, it benefit boater safety, salmon stock management, particularly for kings, and enforcement. and fully submerged gill nets could still be used by subsistence fishermen in the winter.
Okay.
Jack, this is Daryl.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, I was in a meeting earlier about how come the fishermen fish along the Yukon because of drift. And they had to, in order to try to get that drift from going over their net, they had to submerge it, but they had the sinkers on there. Did she explain anything about that, or did she talk about that? Is that part of the proposal?
Go ahead, Christy.
Yeah. Yep. Hi, Daryl. I can explain that. So most of our ACs have already met about this proposal, and the YIRFA board, we met with them, and they went over proposals, and, yeah, we heard that there's fishermen that like to sink their gill nets, particularly in District 5, to avoid some of the high drift times in June and July. And so the YIRFA board came up with an amendment to require that there's a buoy, like a large red buoy, on either end of a subsistence net. And then if your net is longer than 60 feet, you would have to have an additional red buoy in the middle of the net. And so what that would do is allow subsistence fishermen to still sink their gill nets and avoid that drift, but their net would be visible for enforcement if they weren't flying over, or boaters, so that they didn't hit their net. And it would also allow it when we're in times of conservation, we could see if nets are 60 feet or longer, because when we have salmon fishing closed, the nets have to be 60 feet or shorter when we have the conservation concern. And so that's something that the YIRFA board proposed as an amendment. And so I'm sure the Board of Fish is going to take that up. And it looks like the other ACs in the Yukon so far have all supported this proposal as Fishing Game originally proposed it, without that amendment to still sink your gill net. So...
You don't see very many sick tournaments down the Yukon anymore. They drift. Us in the Concord family, we have to suffer. And I've been a fisherman for a long time, and I sink my net. Because who wants to get up and tackle a whole bunch of fish and drift and stay down there in your dead net all day thinking I'd drift? So I really oppose this this proposal for the Kaikuk River. But down, if you realize down the Yukon, you hardly see any fish camps anymore. You hardly see any ship tournaments anymore. Everybody's drifting. So they don't have to worry about their nets being damaged and tore up by drifts. So, this, I know it don't say nothing about the Kaikuk River on here, but it'll affect us. We're part of the problem. We're part of your whole proposal. So I oppose this proposal there.
Would you support the proposal or the intent of the proposal to mark the inner end and the outer end?
Oh, even that, we tried that. You don't sink your floaters, you get snagged.
No, you just put a...
And sometimes the snags just carry your neck right out of the bank. Or carry your neck right out in half.
Exactly.
You want to go over the modifications again, Christy, is marking with a, you just put a buoy with a line on Yardfoot's modification. You put a buoy with a line on it. It's not actually hooked to the net. It's hooked to your, whatever, your stake or your dead man anchor or whatever. and you float the buoy so that the enforcement and people can know that there's a net under the water. That was the discussion. So,
yeah, Jack, this is Daryl.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, that was explained, you know, that would make us, you know, if we do submerge our nets, if we put the buoys on either end or in the middle, it would help with our net not catching any drift. So this proposal is trying to eliminate catching drift. So if we submerge the net with those buoys on there, that would mark them and that would make it legal. So what we're trying to do is make this, submerging the net legal. So this would help with by putting buoys on either end, one in the middle. I think that's what the intent was when they spoke about this proposal.
Yeah, but how come she said showing buoys? I mean, showing floaters.
Those floaters are, the net is submerged, but the floaters are above there because they attach floaters to the top so they could see them.
The way the proposal is written, they would have to have floats on top of the water.
But, yeah, the floaters.
But yard floats.
If they have a 60-foot net, they have 60-foot width of floaters.
But YARDFA's made amended language, and I'm in favor of YARDFA's amended language, of buoying both ends of a 60-foot net or buoying the middle of a net that's longer than 60 feet. I support that amendment. It addresses what the department wants to see, you know, the time frame. I'm fine with the time frame, but I do feel that you should be able to sink your net, but you should have, maybe should have it well marked with a red buoy. So people can... That's the issues. So I would like to adopt the proposal with a modification for well-marked buoys at either end or the middle of the net. And that would, well, and move forward with this proposal.
So we have a vote. I make a motion. Just motion,
Carol, the motion. Go ahead. And then second. We have a second. To modify the proposal 82 to be allowed to sink the net.
Second.
And that's who seconded?
Rudy.
Rudy? Okay. Okay. And further discussion? Okay, question. Those in favor of Proposal 82 as modified?
Aye.
Both ends of the net or the middle? Signified by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign?
Aye.
That's you, Jack. So four.
Yeah.
We have four in support and one opposed.
This is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. Just to make sure I'm following correctly, was that Proposal 82 supported as amended by your AC or supported as written?
No, as amended.
Okay. And I'll work with you to get the exact language for that amendment, unless you'd like to just try and...
Well, I was thinking through the discussion, there would be a well-marked buoy on either end of the net for 60 feet. If it was beyond 60 feet, there would be a buoy on either end plus one in the middle. So that covers what there was. You could still sink the net, but you would show that the net is underneath the water there for navigational purposes.
Okay, thank you.
So, okay. Next one, Christy?
Jack, this is Christy. So one thing after YARDFA submitted this amendment, and I was going to talk to YARDFA about it too, it says gill nets in operation, And I don't know if it would be a burden for all subsistence fishermen to have those big buoys on either end of the net and then one in the middle. I think it would be better if this amendment said it's submerged gill nets in operation were the ones that required to have those floats. Because I don't think it makes sense to require all subsistence fishermen to add those red buoys unless you want to sink your net. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that was the discussion was the sunken gear.
Okay. Yeah, so and so maybe, yeah, so in your amendment, we'll just make sure and include the language that says submerged gill nets have this requirement versus all the other subsistence fishermen that already have their nets at the surface of the water with their float lines and their floats. They don't have this requirement.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the direction of the proposal and the modification revolved around sunken gear between October 1 and April 30. So, okay, clarified that
yep.
for the record. So next one, Christy.
Okay, so next one, Proposal 83, just deals with the personal use salmon fishery on the Tanana River by Fairbanks, between
right.
Fairbanks and North Pole area. Do you guys want to skip that one, or do you want to take that one up? It doesn't affect the Koyukuk area or the Yukon.
I'd prefer to skip that one because not a fact on the Koyukuk River. So we'll skip to number 84.
Okay, and number 84, Dina can introduce, it would affect Yukon River subsistence fishermen in Koyukuk.
So Proposal 84 was proposed by...
Dana, your yep. phone is really staticky and your phone's far away.
Okay, I'll try to talk more directly into my laptop. Is this you better?
I can hear you better. You're a little wobbly, but go right ahead.
So Proposal 84 would repeal and readopt Yukon Area Subsistence Fishing Lawful Gear. So there are a lot of parts and pieces to this proposal. It would do a lot of different things. We went through and cleaned up some old, outdated language that was referring to 8-inch or smaller mesh. We've added some more options during times of conservation. So some things that this proposal would do would be to add eel sticks as a subsistence gear type, because currently they're not listed in regulation anywhere. It would clarify dip net operations by saying that you could use a line attached to it. It would relax the minimum distance between subsistence gear types with low harvest potential while maintaining the 200 feet distance between set gill nets and fish wheels. So, for example, you could fish with a pike net less than 200 feet from your fish wheel. It would apply a 7.5-inch maximum mesh size to gill net fishing year-round for salmon and non-salmon. So it would remove all the outdated references that we had to 8-inch or larger mesh. It would reduce the maximum gill net mesh size to 6 inches or less during the fall chum and coho salmon season. It would increase the maximum mesh size in portions of Beaver and Birch Creek to make them align with the rest of the drainage. Currently in Beaver and Birch Creeks, those portions that are within a subsistence area have a mesh size restriction of like 3 or 3.5. It would just make them that you would fish with 4-inch or smaller mesh to make it consistent with the rest of the drainage. And then during times of salmon conservation, new gear addition options would include adding operations. So during salmon conservations, we could restrict gill nets to 4-inch or smaller mesh like we do for non-salmon. We could restrict it to 4.75 inch or less, and this would be particularly useful in areas where they get a lot of pink salmon, 6 inch or less, or that we could require that gill nets be 7.5 inch mesh size. And so this would be if we wanted to let small fish go through and only have 7.5 inch gill nets in the water. And these would only be options during times of conservation that we would implement these by emergency order. Also during times of conservation, we would have the options of requiring that gill nets be
have a specified net length that they could be operated as a set net, and or that they could be operated within 100 feet of the ordinary high water mark. So, for example, right now in the lower Yukon, you can drift with a 4-inch or smaller mesh net. I don't know how many folks do, but this would allow us during times of conservation to specify the mesh size. So we specify 4-inch or smaller mesh. We could specify that it be of a length, so we could say 60 feet or less, that it be operated as a set net, and that it be within 100 feet of the ordinary high water mark. And so that would mean that you couldn't set it in the middle of a channel. And this would allow us to restrict gear to being close to the shore, or restrict operations when we're trying to have conservation gear types for salmon. Also in the conservation gear section, we combined a King and Chum conservation reg and rewrote it so it could apply to a specified salmon species so that we could, for instance, specify the release of coho so that you could, you know, retain kings and release coho. And right now we don't have any regulations that deal with coho conservation. And there was also a kind of a weird glitch where you could use beach seines and you could use that as a conservation gear for kings where you had to release king salmon alive, but there was no regulation that would allow us to specify you had to release chum or coho from a beach seine. So we just kind of standardized those conservation options and make them apply to salmon species that we could require release of by emergency order. So there is quite a lot that goes on in this proposal. It's quite big. There's a lot of different changes. I will take any questions that you guys have.
One question, the Koyukuk has a 3.5-inch mesh. This would allow 4-inch in the Koyukuk permit area, upper Koyukuk.
It wouldn't change the permit area. So this was just for Birch Creek and Beaver Creek. Just relaxing the smaller mesh. Yeah, it would not change the permit areas. And in the portion of Beaver Creek that's not a subsistence area, it wouldn't change that either.
Okay. Any other questions on the proposal for Dina?
Yeah, it states here that we're only allowed 3.5-inch. That's in August to June. And when we talked to the fish commissioner, he allowed us 6-inch for 1 week. And just this fall, and the chiefs issued all of us fishermen 4-inch mesh. So what's with that?
So this
Sabina, you want to ask a question?
Yeah, this proposal doesn't address the permit areas of the Koyukuk River. We only had that part in there for Beaver and Birch Creek areas, where the, in reg that you can only use 3 or 3.5-inch in those areas. We didn't have there's nothing in this proposal that addresses the permit area up on the...
Oh, this is in the South Fork of the Koyukuk River drainage, upstream from the mouth of the Jim River and in the middle fork of the Koyukuk River drainage. Upstream from the north of the North Fork, Gillett Dam will be used only from August 20th through June 30th, and a Gillett mesh size may not exceed 3.5 inches.
This proposal does not address that regulation, so that would still remain in effect.
You mean a 3.5-inch mesh?
Yep, in that permit area. That would still remain in effect in that permit area. We didn't want to affect areas that were already under a permit.
So that permit area is where I live here, Jack. And it's a 3.5-inch mesh.
Oh, okay.
Basically whitefish, suckers, grayling, stuff like that. There's a salmon avoidance regulation. And I have no problem with staying with 3.5 up here. That doesn't affect downriver. Everything below the mouth of the North Fork, that's not affected by this, by that permit.
Well, they got to specify what North Fork they're talking about.
North Fork of the Koyukuk.
The North Fork Hoosier River.
North Fork of the Koyukuk River, which is It's downstream from me about 25 miles.
Okay.
It's way up above Battles. So, I'm supportive of the proposal. I think it's well thought out. It addresses a lot of different issues. And so, I would like to entertain a motion to adopt Proposal 84. As Dina described, we have a motion to adopt. Is anybody going to make a motion to adopt Proposal 84? Daryl? I don't think Daryl's there. Rudy?
Okay, I will make a motion to adopt Proposal 84.
Okay, thank you. Just to get it on the floor. We have a second. Need a second on the motion.
I second.
Second by Vincent.
I second.
Okay. So, any further discussion on Proposal 84? Question? Those in favor, Proposal 84 is written and described by Dina Jallon. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. Or Christy?
And Jack, this is Christy. Proposal 85 is addressing the personal use salmon fishery by Fairbanks and North Pole area only. It doesn't affect the Yukon drainage or the Koyukuk River. So do you want to move on to
we'll go to 86.
Okay, and then Lisa Stuby with Sportfish is going to introduce 86. It's the only sport fishing proposal for the Yukon.
Okay, go ahead, Lisa.
All right, thank you, Christy. Okay, Mr. Chair, this proposal, Proposal 86, was submitted by the Midnight Sun Flycasters, which is a Fairbanks-based fly fishing organization. And kind of in a nutshell, the proposal basically requires that if a sport fisher captures a salmon with rod and reel, the hook needs to be removed while the fish is still in the water. Oh, hold on a second. And if the salmon is removed from the water, then the salmon becomes part of the bag limit. Now, if, like in the past few years, there have been emergency orders because of low salmon runs that have closed sport fisheries. Like this past year for King and Chum and, Coho salmon. Excuse me, all of a sudden I got something in my throat. And the EO always states that if sport fishing for, my apologies, I haven't coughed all day. Oh, goodness. If sport fishing, for instance, for king salmon, which was closed in early May this year, preseason, that king salmon may not be taken or possessed, and you really cannot target. Of course, you know, fish are fish. If a sport fisher is targeting a sheafish or a northern pike, I mean, a salmon may, you know, incidentally, bite on that lure too. And if that happens, according to the emergency order, that the species may not be removed from the water and must be released immediately. So this proposal only pertains to salmon species for which there is no emergency order, that the regs, you know, will apply to the salmon, and that, you know, the sport fisher has a current sport fishing license. So it just basically says that, you know, if the sport fisher, let's say, you know, hopefully, cross fingers, cross toes, that you know, the summer chums come back this summer, and a sport fisher captures a summer chum and wants to take a photograph, let's say. Well, they better hold that fish close to the water and make sure they take the hook out while the fish is still in the water and not lift the fish out of the water. So that's the proposal in a nutshell. Now, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is opposed to this proposal because it would increase regulatory complexity and also minimize any adverse effects of the cotton release fish by an unknown amount. It could also change angling habitats in a way that are difficult to anticipate. And that, you know, an angler might get the fish and think, oh, okay, I'm going to release this fish. Oh, no, I can't. So it becomes part of the bag limit, whereas before, the fish would have just been released and let go. And I'll take any questions.
Okay. So the objective of the proposal is to release salmon specifically. Yes. In a more kindly manner without breaking the water?
Pretty much, yes. So in other words, if a sport fisher captures a salmon with rod and reel, the hook needs to be removed while the fish is still in the water. And if the salmon is removed from the water, then the salmon becomes part of the bag limit. Again, we're assuming that this salmon is there's no emergency order closing this fishery. And the fish has to become part of the bag limit. And also, just as an FYI, this proposal was submitted drainage-wide, and it's the same as Proposal 65 for the Tanana River, if anybody goes down the Tanana. The Region 3 Division of Sport Fish breaks the Yukon River into two separate management areas.
This would include the salmon closure of the area of the Dalton Highway Corridor?
That's in regulation. The salmon closure area will remain closed in that 5-mile corridor. Yeah, no, sport fishers should not be targeting salmon because that's in regulation. No, this just basically says if a sport fisherman is legally targeting salmon and there's an established bag limit, no emergency orders, they can legally target salmon, that if they hook the salmon, they have to unhook the fish while it's still in the water, and if the salmon is removed from the water to take the hook out, then the salmon becomes part of the bag limit. That definitely does not include, you know, it's in regulation right now. I mean, you're not allowed to sport fish within the 5-mile radius or 10-mile diameter corridor of the Dalton Highway. No, that remains in place.
Okay. So, sit on the KCR Subsistence Resource Commission, and we had Fred Anderson at Sport Fish Division do a sheathfish catch and release study on the Kobuk River.
Mm-hmm.
When they released them properly, released them into a net pen and held them in deep water for a 24-hour period, there was a 3% mortality. Those were handled exceptionally well. I'm of the opinion that it's actually beneficial to, if they want to catch and release salmon, that they should not break water. I actually support this proposal because I've seen some bad things even lately about on Facebook photos of people like taking photos of steelhead and stuff that have broke water, and the fish is laying there gasping on the video out of the water. So I don't think that we can, with the amount of salmon that we have, we can't afford to have any kind of mortality. 3% or more, it's not tolerable. So if it's to reduce the mortalities, I'm all in favor of that. So my opinion is I support Proposal 86. That's it, I think. So, other discussion on this proposal? There are areas in the Yukon River drainage where salmon are caught and released. If they hurt the salmon, basically if you're going to pull the fish out of the water, because it's a big one, you want to get a picture, you shouldn't be able to throw it back in the water. So, other discussion from committee members? So, a motion to adopt Proposal 86 with my intention to oppose or support the proposal. Correction?
Yes, Darrell.
Make a motion. Darrell makes a motion to support. Correct. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay, who's that? I was getting a lot of background. Vincent, okay. Okay, we got a second.
And Jack, this is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. Just want to let you know that we do have Charles Ned back on the line, so there are now six members present.
Okay, welcome back, Charles. So, any further discussion on the proposal? 86. Okay, question. Those in favor of Proposal 86, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, proposal supported. Next proposal.
Hi, Jack, this is Tina Down. Proposal 87 has to do with eel sticks, so I don't know if you guys want to discuss that one or not.
No, that's... I wouldn't even know how to make one of those. So, Proposal 87.
87 was eel sticks, so 88 is Christy up again with our commercial gillnet specifications and operations rewrite.
So this...
Yeah.
I would like to hear the proposal from the department's perspective on this commercial fish gear specification. Go ahead.
Yep, no problem, Jack. This is Christy. I figured that you would. So Proposal 88 was proposed by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And this is a larger proposal that repeals and replaces the commercial salmon gear regulations. And this proposal kind of does three things. The main thing it's doing is it's giving managers more tools in the toolbox to allow some commercial fishing when there's an abundant run of salmon, but there's at the same time a poor run of another species. And it allows us to open up those gears that we use during times of conservation, like manfish wheels, dip nets, and beach seines, and apply it to whatever species are experiencing a poor run. And so this would allow us, if we get back to commercial fishing in future years, if the fall chum run was really strong and the coho run was poor, we could require that fishermen release coho. Right now, we just have these type of protections when we're commercial fishing for king salmon. Like, we can require the release of king salmon. And so I think this would help commercial fishermen on the Yukon if we keep experiencing fluctuations in run sizes. And the second thing it does is it aligns the maximum mesh size to 6 inches in all the Yukon River drainage for commercial fishing. And right now, districts 1 through 6, with the exception of district 5, their maximum mesh size is already limited to 6 inch or smaller. And what happened was in the 2016 Board of Fish meeting, we forgot to include District 5 in that proposal. And so this is more of a housekeeping item. And then the third thing this proposal does is it removes outdated references to 8-inch or greater mesh, because right now no one in the Yukon area for commercial fishing can use 8-inch. So we're just trying to get rid of some of the language that is outdated. And the department submitted and supports this proposal because It does give us more flexibility when we're commercial fishing for salmon, and allows us to have even small commercial periods if we need to release salmon species that has a population concern.
Okay. I, even though, you know, no commercial fishing in the kayak, I do feel that commercial fishery gear risk regulations and the ability to release like coho during a full chum commercial fishery is beneficial to the entire drainage, including the Keokuk River. So I support Proposal 88. Any other questions or for Christy on the proposal? Do we have a motion to adopt Proposal 88?
Jack, this is Kyle from Board Support again. Just wanted to let you know that it looks like Vincent has dropped off the call. I believe he said earlier his phone was running out of battery, so maybe we'll get him back on. You do still currently have a quorum. Charles is back on, so you still have a quorum of five. Just want to let you know.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody want to make a motion to adopt Proposal 88? Are you there, Daryl?
Yeah, Jack, go ahead. Support.
Okay.
I mean,
make the motion?
Make the motion, yes.
Okay, do we have a second?
Yeah, this is Charles, I second.
Hey, Charles. And any further discussion? Proposal 88. Hearing none, question called. Those in favor of Proposal 88 signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Proposal supported. Those opposed, same sign. Okay. And Proposal 89.
Hi, Jack. This is Dina. Proposal 89 has to do with commercial dip net gear operations, so you may also want to skip that
one. I don't think that considering Keokuk River, we don't use dip nets.
We do reference this proposal in the subsistence gear just to say that this proposal recognizes a way that fishermen have been using dip nets where they've attached a line to the handle of the dip net, and then use that line to, like, dangle the dip net over the side of their boat and then hauled it in by that line. So that wordage, dip nets must have a single rigid handle and be operated by hand, and may also have a line attached to the handle, is also included in the subsistence section. But it's just recognizing this practice that folks have started using on the Yukon, especially in the commercial dip net fishery.
Okay. You're not inclined to support the proposal, Jackie?
That's not supporting wise, but we don't use it. I mean, we don't use dip nets, maybe to catch the fish after we hook it.
It's basically a housekeeping proposal. Correct, Dina?
No, it is. It's an issue that the troopers brought up where they observed folks fishing in this manner, and so the troopers asked, you know, is that an allowable way to use this gear? And so this would recognize that practice and put it into regulation that it is an allowable way to operate the dip net, where you've got a single handle with a single line attached to it, and you're not necessarily holding onto the handle, but you're holding onto the line. So this is a new proposal that would address how some folks are using their dip nets currently.
Okay.
Hop River, or?
This would only be in the Yukon area.
Can you use it in the Yukon?
If this proposal passes, then you would be able to operate dip nets in this manner in the Yukon area. This proposal 89 is just for commercial dip nets, but we did include that wording of a handle with a single line attached in the subsistence 84 proposal as well.
So they use DIPNEP a lot in the lower Yukon for commercial because of the restrictions on trying to avoid king harvest.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, let's just hold it as housekeeping because we're not commercial fishermen and we don't use depth nets, and so I don't know, it depends on the other board members.
So, the chair will entertain a motion to adopt proposal 89 to get it on the table to vote it up or down. So, anybody want to make a motion to adopt proposal 89?
I make a motion.
Jack. Do we have a second?
Is Darryl a second?
Darryl? Okay. Discussion?
Yeah, Jack, this is Darryl. Yeah, you know, like Jack Holster is saying, this is something that affects along the Yukon River, but it's not really utilized much in the Kaikuk River. Would it be all right if we just deferred, or do we have to vote on it?
We got it on the table. We can defer it if you're inclined to, if it doesn't apply to us.
Yeah, I think it would be good because we don't, you know much of this dip netting, and maybe the areas that do utilize this, they could do their own recommendations for us.
Okay. So the consensus of other committee members, the consensus would be to defer the proposals. That sound good.
Yes.
Yeah. I think my battery's going dead.
Okay. So we'll defer this proposal. That covers the Yukon River. It gets into Kuskwim now. So any other points or discussions, Christy or?
This is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. Just to clarify, there's not really a deferral isn't necessarily one of the things that advisory committees can do on a proposal to come up. So I'll either mark this down as a took no action. I think that might be what you were intending.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
So yes, there was one more proposal, 140, which is the South Unimak Shumagin Islands Salmon Management Plan. This proposal was submitted by the Fairbanks Advisory Committee because of the concerns for interception in the current management plan. And the Western Tier Regional Advisory Council supported Proposal 140 because we would like the Board of Fish at their South Alaska Peninsula meeting to address that significant bycatch in Area M, and it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Christy and Dina, it was like 950,000 chums in 2021 and like, what is it, like 500 something thousand this last summer, 2020? This is something like that? Dina or Christy?
Yeah, this last summer I think it was like close to 800,000 if you looked at the June and July chum salmon catch in Area M. And then the last, I can't remember exactly what it was in 2020 or 2021, but it was higher than that.
Yeah. I saw the last numbers. I was tracking those. The last numbers I saw for 21, it could have been over a million chum salmon. But everybody else is sitting on the beach waiting for, and so I've seen seeing genetic figures that possibly 57% of those fish that were caught in Area M would be Yukon and Kuskokwim stock. But I feel that Proposal 140 gets the issue back onto the table so that the Board of Fish can address this problem. It's a problem. What Area M is trying to do is to catch sockeye that are moving through is an allocation of the Bristol Bay sockeye run, but they're catching bycatch of chum salmon, Chinook, and coho. And so there can be coho caught there also. So part of a Proposal 140 is to have the book for Proposal 140. It should be in the blue book. I feel that we should support Proposal 140 to address that management plan to help reduce the especially the chum salmon bycatch, which is that it was a problem years ago and it's become another, it keeps coming back. And so I do feel that there's aspects to that fishery. They eliminated genetic sampling for the chum salmon that moved through there. They just, the department wanted to like close their eyes to where those stocks may be going to. I feel that they should reinstitute chum salmon genetic analysis for the Area M bycatch of chum salmon. I feel that the management plan should be overhauled at the next Board of Fish meeting on South Alaska or the Alaska Peninsula. So the chair will entertain a motion to adopt Proposal 140. I think it's a big issue for the Keokuk River because so many of those chums are going into the Keokuk. Henshaw at one point was producing, had returns of 10 to 15% of the entire summer chum run went into the Henshaw Creek Range in the Keokuk. Something like that. Correct?
Yes, this is Darryl. I'll make a motion.
Darryl? Do we have a second?
Jack, this is Kyle Camp. Looks like maybe they just rejoined. We lost Jack Holchies,
No, I'm not gone.
Oh, great. Okay. Just want to make sure you still have the quorum.
We're looking for a second for Proposal 140, which would address Area M management plan interception of chum salmon. I need a second for this.
Oh.
Do we have a second?
This is Charles.
Okay, Charles. Okay. Any further discussion? Those in favor of question, those in favor of Proposal 140, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Proposal supported?
No.
Oh, no. Was that? Who said no?
Oh, no, I said hello.
Oh, hello, hello, okay. Okay. So, Proposal 140 is the best proposal that I know of that the committee should actually. So, does staff have any other, fishery staff have anything else for us?
No, I think we're good. We tried to raise meeting information earlier. We'll be heading down to the Board of Fish meeting Friday.
Okay.
Presentations start on Saturday. If folks can tune into those presentations online Saturday, it'll be really good. It'll be good to get to hear from Zach Liller about his statement goals. There'll be updates on the ichthyophonus work, updates on the marine survey work. All those presentations will be streamed online on the Board of Fish website. So.
Okay. I I'll be trying to get on that. If I get enough bandwidth, I'll listen to that. Thank you. So I appreciate staff presentations and interaction with the committee. So we're moving down the agenda for scheduling the next advisory committee meeting. Glenn says that the Board of Game call for wildlife proposals, game proposals, is on May 1, so we should have a meeting before then. I actually got kind of a bunch of meetings in April, but how would the committee feel about a meeting in late March, face-to-face meeting? When is all these spring carnivals and stuff happening? Committee member comments?
March.
Early or late March?
Late, I think. April. March, April.
Oh. So how would a face-to-face committee meeting on March 21-ish, is that any kind of a conflict, Kyle, that you can see?
I do believe that the Board of Games South Central meeting will be happening then in Fuldotna, though I don't see that should be, so long as that works for the area biologists, Glenn and Sarah, we're on this call still. I will be available then, so I think a March 20th time frame should be fine.
Okay. Is that good? Are you still there, Glenn? Is that good for you and Sarah?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. And location? Does the committee members have a preference on where to have the meeting at? Could be one of the communities, or sometimes we've had meetings in Fairbanks.
Hey, Jack, it's Daryl.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yes, I think it would be good if we kind of utilize Fairbanks kind of like a hub for us, so if everybody wants to get to the dirt, that's fine.
Okay. So is the Fairbanks meeting doable?
Jack and Glenn.
Glenn.
Yeah, I want to suggest people maybe think about having it out in the communities. We haven't been out in the villages for a while, mostly because of COVID, but I think today is a good example with kind of struggling with participation that we kind of need to meet in a village and kind of reinvigorate the committee as a whole and get some participation at the community level. And I think that would have just really happened a lot better if we could do it in a village.
Yeah. Been quite a while since we've had a meeting in one of the villages. And so we were down in Huesley at last time. What would be the Does any committee members feel, what do you think about having a meeting in Allakaket?
That would be fine if we had a meeting in Allakaket. That would be fine with me. Just do.
So, Charles?
Yeah.
Does that sound good? And Rudy?
Yeah, I think Charles sounds good.
Does that sound good, Rudy?
Tentative on that. I'll have to figure out more of my schedule.
Okay. So,
Jack, this is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. So I'm just looking back at your past meetings. It looks like the last face-to-face meeting was in 2018, and it was held in – well, actually, no, there was a meeting held in Fairbanks in 2019.
Yeah.
There was the last – meeting held in one of the representative communities was in Allakaket in 2018. Looks like it's been mostly teleconference since then. I did request a budget approval earlier this year to support at least one meeting with travel for your advisory committee. So we do have the funding approved to bring members either to one of the represented communities or to Fairbanks to kind of set up a meeting in Fairbanks, whatever is determined to be the best for their committee. And then just in terms of thinking about holding elections at the same time during this March meeting that you're planning, with the two vacancies you declared at the start of today's meeting, there is no representation from Alatna. There is also no representation from Bettles. The only seats that are not expired are those from SKUs. So, and there are a couple of vacant undesignated seats, at least one vacancy from Alec Hackett, and expired seats from Husia. So my recommendation would be to consider holding elections for those expired and vacant seats, either at a meeting held in Fairbanks or at a meeting held in one of the constituent communities.
Okay. So, yeah, it's been so long since we had a face-to-face meeting, I forgot where we last met. I thought it was in Husia, but I'm probably wrong. It was Husia and then Alec Hackett, because I think it was 18 we had a meeting in the fall, Alec Hackett. So we could go back to Alec Hackett, or we could go to Husia. What does the committee feel about that? Which one of those communities?
Anyone?
This is Rudy. Alec Hackett will be hosting Ambler Road meetings. A few other things in the next few months. I don't know if we can go back-to-back-to-back with hosting a village meeting.
Okay. So how about Husia? That would be – and does most people have open schedule for around the week of the 20th of March? Do you have any conflicting meetings with Ambler Road, Adia, or anything like that, Rudy?
I think Alec Hackett has good representation with Charles and Vincent. My being on this board today is just probably temporary.
Okay. And Vincent and Charles, you're good to travel to Husia then, or?
Yeah, this is Charles. Yes.
We normally got a charter. We'd charter down and then come back the next day. So, Vincent? You're still there, Vince? Dropped out. We'll make it preliminary for the week of the 20th of March in Husia. Apparently Alec Hackett's getting inundated with meetings. So any opposition to those that date and dates and location? Gerald?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we have a pretty busy month in March because there'll be a convention going on in Fairbanks for TCC and assorted other meetings. I think I'm not too sure when we're doing the Western Ontario Regional. When is that one come up? In April?
It's in April, though. That's an ANIAC. Like
okay. Okay.
Oh, when is the Canada Chiefs Conference?
Okay, so we're trying to schedule before the meeting in May, right? Is that what the purpose of the meeting?
I'm pretty swamped with meetings in April.
Yeah, March is pretty busy, so I'll let you know if I'll be able to attend this.
So there's
me too, because I have to travel for all those meetings.
What about the week of the 14th? We don't. I missed throughout the 20th, 14th of March.
Well, got to find out when to attend the Chiefs conference is.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Well, we'll put it down for like the middle of March ish, and Kyle can get a hold of you and try and figure out with you guys what's not going to be in conflict. So around that time.
Okay. Yeah.
Good to you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sound good, Kyle?
I'm sorry, did I understand correctly you're talking now instead of the week of March 20th, looking at that second week of March?
Well, the middle of March. I'm not sure when the TCC meetings and stuff is going to happen, so around that time.
Sure, and we can stay in contact to kind of finalize the best date that will work for everyone. And if there are going to be members traveling to Fairbanks for other meetings, I definitely agree with what Glenn said earlier, that there's a lot of value to holding the meeting in one of the communities represented by UAC. If it worked best for the committee to hold a meeting in Fairbanks, we could also arrange accommodations to set you all up in Fairbanks if you wanted to, if it worked best for the committee members to meet in Fairbanks.
Right. Well, Glenn's right. It's been quite a while.
Is there anyone available to pick up my order from Arden?
And to have a meeting in Hoosley to get more participation from the community and then have elections there also.
Thank you, sir.
That around the middle of March work for you, Glenn? Ish.
Yeah, that's good for me.
Okay. So, all right, I think we've got that all squared away. And then I don't see any, I don't know of any other. And so any other comments or from the committee members? We're at the end of the meeting.
Jack, this is Kyle Campbell. I just wanted to also make sure that the last kind of item on the agenda after new business was to select representatives for your board meeting. And as I made you all aware earlier, Daryl, who I think we still have on the call, he's in Anchorage currently. He will be attending the Board of Fisheries meeting that begins on Saturday. So if your committee wanted to kind of formally, while you still have a quorum here present, discuss having Daryl represent your committee at this upcoming AYK meeting for the Board of Fisheries, this would be a great time to do so. And you could also discuss if you wanted to have a representative at the Alaska Peninsula meeting for the Board of Fisheries in February, where that proposal 140 will be deliberated on.
Okay. Since Daryl is in Anchorage and is going to be at the Board of Fish meeting, it would be good for him to represent the committee. Any opposition to Daryl representing the committee at the Board of Fish meeting in Anchorage starting soon? When Friday? Saturday, I guess. You good with that, Daryl?
Yeah, you could just send me the information on opposition and support. That way I know, what I could say in the 10 minutes to give me.
Yeah, Kyle's been taking notes here. He'll transmit that to you.
Okay, thank you. I will be here. I'm busy working on making sure that hook and line goes through us. I think we supported it in our Western Ontario, but now it's coming up to our board Fisher.
Yes. So appreciate you doing that for us, Carol. And the Area M representative, is there a possibility, that's just one proposal, is there a possibility that we could call into that for that comment?
Unfortunately, the Board of Fisheries made the decision earlier this year that they will not allow remote testimony from advisory committees this year. So the only opportunity to provide oral testimony during a Board of Fisheries meeting will be in person. Written comment, of course, can always be submitted. But yeah, the Board of Fisheries will only be accepting testimony in person. That said, given the sort of tight timing, it sounds like Daryl already is in Anchorage. I'm assuming hopefully Daryl didn't have to pay out of pocket for that. But board support does have limited funding, but we should have enough to send a member from your committee to that Board of Fisheries meeting next month in Anchorage if you did want to have a member of your advisory committee testify at Alaska Peninsula meeting.
Okay. Who would be willing to do that? Would you do that one, Daryl, also? Or are you going to be there at that time, at Board of Fish meeting?
What day is it?
Well,
give me one moment to get the exact date. And even if February 17th, when that meeting starts, or maybe February 20th, I think the comment deadline is 23rd.
You're really breaking up. You'll say that again?
Yeah, it's February 20th to the 25th for the area of MLE.
That's correct, yeah. Thank you.
I'm not too sure where I'll be at that time. I might be able to come down if they need me down there. I will speak on behalf. Or,
here I am. We could have an alternate. Who else could travel to the State Board of Fish meeting and whether it was the 20th or the 25th? Something like that. So the comment would be at the comment period is typically at the beginning of the meeting. Anybody available to be an alternate in case Daryl can't go to that one? Put you down there, preliminary. Daryl?
Okay. Yep, I'll be here. Just let me know and give me the time to travel here.
Okay. So, any other things there, Kyle?
Nothing further from board support at this time.
Any other final comments from the committee members? So, hearing none, Daryl, to adjourn the meeting. To adjourn.
This is Daryl. So move. To adjourn.
Motion to adjourn by Daryl. We have a second.
This is Charles, a second.
Okay, Charles. Okay, the question is called. Those in favor of adjournment, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So much for being on the call. I appreciate it. Make some important decisions. So, and thanks to the staff for participation. And I think we had a great meeting. So, okay. Have a great night. Happy New Year.
Thanks for having a great meeting.
Thank you, Jack.
Bye.
Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.